Good afternoon, and welcome to the September 2017 InfoTech Threat Landscape Briefing. My name is Jessica Ireland, and I am an Associate Director in our Security and Threat Intelligence Practice. I will be facilitating and participating in today's briefing. During today's discussion, we will cover topics related to cybersecurity, threat actor campaigns, regulatory compliance and legal issues, and threat actor exploits and tactics. Our cybersecurity section covers high-level topics such as threat trends, data breaches, control strategies, and exposure to vulnerabilities that will broaden your understanding of the cybersecurity impact on your business. Our threat actor campaign section covers topics related to nation-states, cybercriminals, and hacktivists orchestrating campaigns designed to compromise networks and exfiltrate sensitive data. Our regulatory compliance and legal section covers trends in the global regulatory and legal landscape with the potential to impact compliance adherences or disrupt business operations. And lastly, our exploitation and tactics section provides information related to the tools, tactics, and exploits threat actors are leveraging in their attack campaigns. Today's briefing will also be supported by research manager Celine Gravelins, Senior Consulting Analyst Cameron Smith, and Consulting Analyst Azam Jabraj.
During today's briefing, we will cover topics related to InfoSec execs boosting their SOC deployments, the HBO hack, NIST digital guidelines, and gas pump skimmers sending card data via text. And now on to our first topic.
Global attacks like WannaCry and Petya are bringing cyber attacks to the forefront. It's not just large organizations that care anymore. We are all becoming more and more aware of the real costs of these attacks and of not being prepared for them. Endgame, an endpoint protection solution, partnered with Forrester and surveyed 156 security decision makers this past spring to understand more about what these professionals are doing about the new threat landscape in their own organizations. Are they leveling up their SOCs or staying with the status quo? One aspect that stuck out in the survey's results is that security professionals are taking this reality check and choosing to actively expand or upgrade their current operations. 60% of the respondents said they were pursuing this. Some of the challenges that were reviewed in the survey results are not surprising, but in reading it, security professionals would undoubtedly feel less alone in the battles they're fighting. With 40% of survey participants experiencing three or more kinds of attacks in just the last year, and 92% experiencing at least one successful attack that put their business at risk this past year, it's no wonder they're becoming more motivated to make improvements. Participants said targeted attacks and phishing are top priority to deal with for most of them. However, more global organizations are looking at third and fourth party breaches and organized crime. Over a quarter of the participants said they are targeted daily by criminal or nation state organizations. But while organizations seem to be aware of areas they could be doing better in, they are still up against the obstacle of an overall lack of resources. It's difficult to find qualified individuals, and some organizations are finding that the 10 to 15 year veterans they were looking at were demonstrating an overall lack of desire to learn and grow. In terms of conclusions that the respondents had come to regarding leveling up their SOC deployments, it was not about adding, but rather simplifying. The respondents who stated they use 5 to 8 technologies in their SOC are looking to consolidate and reduce where possible. Following from that is finding opportunities to train current staff or automate processes to reduce overhead. There's also the option of using the staff you have, which means hiring fewer new people and therefore saving money as a result. The goal of simplifying or consolidating also cuts down on effort in other ways by reducing alert fatigue. When you reduce the amount of tools you're working with, you reduce the amount of alerts you need to sift through. Another consideration is partnering with a security vendor to supplement your operations and/or alert monitoring to take even more off your team's plate, which many of these survey respondents did.
past summer was filled with misfortune for television network HBO. They suffered a massive server breach, leading to a leak of allegedly 1.5 terabytes of data. A hacker, an individual group only identified as Mr. Smith, claimed responsibility. So far, they've released scripts of episodes, such as from Game of Thrones, entire episodes themselves of shows including Curb Your Enthusiasm and Ballers, and other sensitive internal documents such as emails, employment agreements, and marketing strategy PDFs. However, HBO CEO believes that the email system as a whole hasn't been compromised. A ransom note was also found, left for HBO by the attackers, demanding millions of dollars. If paid, the attacker claims they'll stop leaking the massive amounts of data that they already have access to. To prove that they actually have this data, they've also included a screenshot of a file directory, which implies access to information of other shows. HBO allegedly responded by offering a $250,000 payment for a bug bounty program, rather than calling it a ransom payment. HBO also requested more time. Some believe this was simply a delay tactic, and no further communication with the attacker is ongoing. While paying the ransom could potentially lead to the end of this issue for HBO, showing the world that you're willing to give in to the demands of an attacker often puts a serious target on your back. Organizations that pay the ransom let other attackers know that they too can make a profit by exploiting them. Most security experts agree to avoid giving in to ransom demands at all costs. HBO also suffered some other potentially unrelated incidents in the same time frame over the past month. Two separate Game of Thrones episodes were leaked prior to their scheduled air date. Season 7, Episode 4 was leaked, not from Mr. Smith and this hacker group, but as a result of an employee who worked at a third-party vendor, Sky India, which carries HBO in India. After that, Episode 6 of the show was also accidentally aired on HBO's Nordic and Hispanic services before the intended air date a short while later. On top of this, HBO's Twitter and Facebook accounts, along with those of other HBO shows, were targeted and breached. Here we can see a tweet that was sent out by the notorious hackers Armine, sent out claiming to be testing the security of HBO. HBO was able to regain control about an hour later, but it still provided embarrassment after everything that's been happening in the previous few weeks. While these events were likely not directly related, once an organization suffers a breach, they often become more attractive to other hackers, as they've, number one, demonstrated their vulnerabilities, and number two, are so preoccupied handling the current incident that they aren't focused on other incoming attacks. There will be copycats and those wanting to see if they can push the same boundaries. For example, after the major Sony breach back in 2014, Sony suffered another 20 separate breaches in the 2 months following. It's always difficult to put a price tag on a breach before everything is said and done, but HBO will be looking at shelling out major expenses for security remediation, including new or updated controls, technology, and processes, as well as legal reviews and forensic investigation. They're also looking at revenue lost from viewers watching the pirated versions of these shows. However, HBO is fortunate that this damage seems to be limited. Even with the leak, the August 6th airing of the Game of Thrones episode set a new record with over 10.2 million viewers of the show. Also, fortunately for this breach, no sensitive customer or highly personal employee information was breached. Since the public doesn't really feel victimized in any way, they're more likely to sympathize with HBO about this incident, hopefully allowing HBO to maintain their reputation and subscription base. With HBO in the spotlight over the past few weeks, it's interesting to see all the various ways that they suffered from these incidents. Richard Ford, a chief scientist at the software company Forcepoint, made the statement regarding all the issues HBO has been facing. Quote, "They have some supply chain issues. They have malicious insiders. They have accidental insiders. They have an account compromised. It crosses a range of issues that highlight the challenges that a big organization like HBO faces." End quote. This raises the point that this could easily have happened to many other organizations. Security incidents, at least at some level, are inevitable for every organization. The key is to be prepared to handle them effectively and efficiently. Having an incident response program in place is essential for swift remediation and proper escalations, both internally and externally. Having a communication plan ready to inform stakeholders and the public of the breach is critical to get a handle on the event before the media and the public is able to draft their own narrative. Internally, end users remain the weakest link. The accidental leak by HBO Nordic and Hispana may have been prevented by more careful actions by employees. And as demonstrated by the leak through Sky India, Ensure that you're employing due diligence with all third-party vendors to avoid a leak through those channels. And as always, continuously refine the vulnerability management and patch management programs to ensure that all controls are up to date and providing the best security possible. Taking these steps, the number of successful incidents should be minimized, and if they do occur, the steps you've taken towards preparation should help reduce the damage and allow for faster remediation.
Hello, and welcome to the compliance and regulatory section of this month's threat briefing. My name is Cameron Smith, and I will be discussing the recent update to NIST's special publication 800-63 version 3, containing guidelines for digital identity security. Digital identity is defined here as the online persona of a subject. This could mean that the online persona is linked to a person's actual identity and personal information, or it could mean that there is a unique but anonymous identity. Different types of transactions will require different levels of authentication. For example, highly sensitive systems will demand a high level of security and perhaps verification of personal identity, while lower sensitivity transactions will require lower security and perhaps an online persona, which is anonymous, would be sufficient. Previously, through the standards of the NIST digital identity publications, organizations could specify a level of assurance as an indicator of how mature are their implementations of digital identity management processes and technologies. This metric, which was a single level of assurance, represented the entire program. And this has been retired in favor of a multiple metric system, in which three separate assurance levels will attest to the maturity of different aspects of the digital identity management system. These three levels are as follows. Firstly, identity assurance level refers to the processes for proving or validating identity. These processes and identity evidence that will be required of a subscriber to support their claim of identity. Secondly, authenticator assurance level refers to the authentication process, the process where we determine the validity of a user's claim of a digital identity and access to digital services. This does not necessarily require knowledge of the user's real-life identity. And thirdly, federation assurance level. This refers to the strength of the assertion in a federated environment, the processes that allow for conveyance of authentication and subscriber information across networked systems, usually not under common administration. By subdividing this workflow of digital identity management, this will give users and organizations more flexibility to report their state of security. As mentioned earlier, different transactions require different levels of authentication and assurance. For example, I can report a high level of authenticator assurance even if my identity assurance level is in a low maturity state. The suite of guidelines are now provided in four separate documents. Firstly, there's a capstone document that provides a general rationale and overview for the rest of the program. You'll see in the downloads, this is NIST document 800-63-3. Each of the attestation levels gets its own document as well. 800-63A outlines identity assurance, 800-63B outlines authenticator assurance, 800-63C outlines federation assurance. Further to these sweeping structural changes, there are a few more specific changes to the NIST's position on security and best practices. Firstly, knowledge authentication. These are the questions that your bank might ask when you try to log in from a new computer. What is your mother's maiden name? What was the name of your first pet? NIST no longer considers these to be valid security control. Really, they are a subtype of weak passwords, and they tend to be a fairly poor type at that, as they are easily discovered through social media or social engineering. Further, email and SMS are not considered secure methods to communicate one-time passwords. In some cases, this type of one-time password had been presented as an alternative to cryptographic authenticators, for example, as a thing you have, which would supplement the thing you know, which is your password. However, neither of these are really a thing you have. Both email and SMS are a thing that was sent to you, and they could be easily intercepted. In place of SMS or email, multi-factor authenticators should be based on a secure one-time password protocol such as U2F or based on cryptographic software or hardware that is local to the end user. The guidelines also provide best practices on how to best incorporate biometric factors as a part of security, or on how to design account recovery processes, and there are new recommendations for password management. No longer are regularly scheduled password resets recommended. Furthermore, their research has shown that expiry and composition did little to improve security, and so complexity requirements have changed. It is best practice now to prevent the lazy and easily guessed credentials by blocking common usernames and blocking dictionary words, or blocking common, repetitive, or easily guessed passwords. However, adding additional special character requirements or other complexities provide little additional benefit and increase the likelihood that the user will write down the password, forget frequently, or engage in some other risky behaviors. Rather, add a few additional characters for additional security benefit and forget some of these other old-fashioned recommendations. One of the co-authors, Paul Grassi, has said in a CISO magazine interview that these old-fashioned approaches to password security are absolutely harming user experience, and a bad user experience is a vulnerability in our minds. What InfoTech recommends in light of these new guidelines is firstly to confirm whether these standards will be requirements for you now or in the future. And secondly, we recommend for all organizations, whether these requirements are mandatory or not, to review these documents and bring yourself up to speed on the latest and greatest best practices. Even better, schedule a call with one of our analysts here at InfoTech to discuss your digital identity in more detail.
Skimming is a tactic hackers have used since debit and credit cards became a popular method of payment. Traditionally, skimming is done by attaching a device to an ATM, gas pump, retail point of sale system, or anywhere users have to swipe their credit cards. The device then reads the data on the card's magnetic strip and stores the information for the hackers to collect. Initially, hackers had to then retrieve the device to read the stored credit card data. But with the invention of Bluetooth, hackers could just be near the device to collect the data without having to remove it. This was a major advantage for hackers, as they could leave the device in the machine and collect the data periodically until the device was found. The main problems with the Bluetooth solution for the hackers where they had to be physically near the device to collect the data, and they didn't get the data until it was collected. The device also emitted a Bluetooth signal, making it easier to find. Therefore, if the device was found or it malfunctioned, the hackers would not get the data. At the same time, the hackers needed to continuously travel to the location of the skimmer, which increased their risk. Now, however, there is a new type of skimmer that reduces the risk for hackers and increases their ability to collect the stolen data. As reported by Krebs on Security, hackers have now created a skimmer that can send text messages to the hackers. By using parts from an old phone, hackers have created a skimmer that has a SIM card and have placed them in gas pumps, using the gas pumps to power the device as well. Hackers can now leave these devices inside the gas pumps, and each time a user swipes his debit or credit card, the device will send the hackers a text message with the stolen data in real time. This drastically increases the hacker's ability to collect the stolen data, and they can start using your credit card even before you have left the gas station. Currently, three of these devices have been found in gas pumps in New York, but they can expand quickly to other states. Typically, hackers will bribe or distract the gas attendant or visit the gas station when it is closed to install these skimming devices. There are a number of ways both individuals and gas stations can protect their data or reduce the impact of skimming. Unfortunately, in the US, gas stations can continue using magnetic strip readers until 2020. However, gas stations should buy pin and chip readers for their new gas pumps to stop skimming. Gas stations should also increase their physical security by installing cameras, custom locks, and periodically inspecting their pumps for skimmers to reduce the effect on their customers. For individuals, It is difficult to determine if there is a skimming device in a machine, but there are a number of precautions that you can take to reduce the effect of skimming. Firstly, do not use your debit card at gas stations, only your credit card, to reduce the hacker's ability to withdraw money straight from your accounts. Alternatively, using cash is the safest method of payment at gas stations. Secondly, cover your PIN from prying eyes and cameras in case the hackers are watching for your PIN. Finally, report any strange or fraudulent activity on your credit card or bank accounts immediately to get them blocked and reduce the effect of skimming.
This concludes our September 2017 threat briefing. Included in today's presentations were several hyperlinks to our research blueprints that you can use to address some of the threats presented during the briefing. If you have any questions or need any support, please do not hesitate to contact us to set up an analyst call. Thank you.